Thank you, Joel. You can just stay seated right there, brother. Thank you for your message and the good news that God sees and knows. It's truly, truly encouraging and really transformative. In light of your talk, brother, I do want to invite up Natasha and Angie, if you guys can come up to the stage for our panel discussion this afternoon or this morning. As we continue to think about what Pastor Joel encouraged us in that there's hope in the gospel for the exploited and the abused. And here you go, Natasha, I'll pass that along to you. And as you guys are making your way up front, before I ask you the question, I would love for you guys just to introduce yourself and share where you're from and what you do. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Natasha. And I'm married to Jordan. We have two kids. We live right in the neighborhood down the street. We moved here from Denton, Texas to be a part of this church, and we're not on staff. We're just members of this church and just seek to be faithful members, loving this body and this city and neighborhood.
Amen. Faithful member. I love that. Come on.
Hi, I'm Angie. I am from Massachusetts. We went to a different church in Rhode Island. Now we're at Grace Harbor, and we're excited to be in the city. I was a teacher in New Bedford Public Schools for a while, and I'll talk about that a little bit more with my question. But I'm a mom of two kids and a wife.
Amen. Joel, let's begin with you, brother, in light of your powerful message. How are you inviting your congregation in Baltimore? How are you inviting your congregation to take on the plight or burden of the abused and exploited, even as they themselves may be experiencing some of the same troubles in their own lives?
So in our church covenant, we quote Galatians 6:2, which says, bear one another's burdens and sorrows, and so fulfill the law of Christ. And so we regularly read that together. Mm-hmm. I think part of it is just in our the discipleship, the preaching, the counseling, even the liturgy of the church, to constantly be reinforcing the fact that we do bear each other's burdens. Right. And that assumes that I have my own burdens, right, but I'm called to also bear your burdens, right, and sorrows. Some of the practical ways that we might live that out, one is I try to counsel folks to really listen. You know, as we're bearing each other's burdens, it's so easy to start with my own burden and say, oh, what you're saying actually reminds me of something that happened to me. Let me go ahead and tell you my story so that I can tell you how I overcame it, right, and kind of give you this nice little silver bullet.
Right.
What that communicates to you is that I'm not actually listening to you, and I'm not hearing your story. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so I think it's important for us, even those of us who have been abused, to recognize that your pain is not my pain, and my pain is not your pain. Like, there is differences, and how it's affected me might be different than how it's affected you.
Right.
So I want to encourage people to not lead with your own stories, but to listen well, to communicate, I see and I know. Mm-hmm. Maybe eventually we'll get to some similarities, but I just don't think that that's the best place to start. Now, having said that, one thing that is also true is while some people have the ability to do that, for others, it can be a trigger. You know, hearing of your abuse sitting down can be a trigger for somebody, and I've seen that a lot in our church, like a real bad trigger where mm-hmm. they just shut down. Mm-hmm. And they're just not at that place. So for that reason, we take small group approaches. Let me back up a little bit. Bearing one another's burdens and sorrows is not an individual's task.
Right.
I don't think there's one person in the church that's wired to be able to bear the burdens of another person. It's a church job, right? And so what we'll do to kind of practically live that out is when we know that there's somebody who's been abused and even others who have similar triggers that are trying to love that person, we try to informally bring a team around them. Sometimes they know it, sometimes they don't, but we have group text messages going on saying, hey, so-and-so is having suicidal thoughts. Who else has been talking to this person? And we can kind of work together and share the load that way, mm-hmm. which really helps the person who's triggered. We've got one small group that we're starting up soon on the topic, so that might be helpful. We'll find out. prayer meetings as a church. But the key, though, is just what does it look like for us to live out Galatians 6:2, regardless of our backgrounds, and bear each other's burdens.
That's so good, brother. That's really good. You know, even in light of that, Natasha, here's your question. As we think corporately together, not just individually, how are some ways, what are some ways that a household can bear with their brothers, sisters, and neighbors who are experiencing exploitation or abuse? What would be your encouragement to that question?
Well, very practically, just being able to know the signs of such situations and just kind of the proper, you know, who get involved, whether that's the police or DCF or whatever the case may be. So just being educated, even just a little bit about those things, and just keeping yourself aware and eyes open to, you know, people walking into your church on a Sunday that you've never met before, especially children, women, and just people around the neighborhood for sure. I think another practical way that is more long-term is just the foster system, supporting the foster system, supporting people who are foster parents, maybe becoming a foster parent. That's a real like way to get, I've known several families who have been foster families, and they have, and this doesn't always happen, but they do have a, are able sometimes to have a relationship with the birth mom or the birth parents, and speak into their life and be a witness into their life in a tangible way for the gospel. And so even if you don't get that opportunity, I think it just puts you in the vicinity of being able to pray, know what's happening, and just kind of be involved with those who are in really vulnerable positions. If you can't do that, possibly consider being respite certified so that you can help those who are doing that. I think there's a lot of ways to help with that, but I would also say keep your home opened and decide ahead of time, like decide as a husband and wife ahead of time and as a family, would we have someone stay in our home with us? If we come across, you know, a woman who's being abused and she needs a safe place to stay, can we offer her a bedroom in our home? That's not going to work for every single person, but I think being aware and ready for that is wise in a lot of cases. And then I would just say, be aware, keep your eyes open, look up, look around you. I'll tell you a really quick story. When we first moved here, and this is kind of an encouragement for mothers, when we first moved here, my next door neighbor said, you know, don't go anywhere in that direction. Like, don't go to the projects that are right on the corner of where we live, where our house is. That's dangerous. You don't want to go over there. Keep your kids away. Don't go to those parks. You know, there's drugs there, all this stuff. And I mean, we go quite a lot to the park down in our neighborhood. And by just doing that, just going to the park in our neighborhood, I was able to see and meet. Now, I don't have a relationship with this woman yet. You can pray that we would be able to. She would recognize me and know me, but I met this mom, a single mom. Her name's Alyssa. For a couple years, I didn't even know her name up until last summer. But she walks around with her little babies in tow. Almost every time I see her, she's with a new man, usually an older man. The things I've seen her around, as I just see her kind of walk on our street and see her at the park, and sometimes I'll be driving and we pull up next to each other. Like, I see her everywhere. It's concerning. And so I've just been praying for Alyssa. I've been praying for more opportunities, that we would be at the park at the same time, that we'd be able, you know, that I'd have that if she's there, then I can actually talk to her. But you know, if I were, I think it's really easy as, especially as a mom, to think, well, I can't get involved with people who are so broken and in such a dire situation. I'm so ill-equipped, or I don't have the time, or I'm already exhausted as it is, or I've got to keep my kids safe. like, those are definitely things to consider, but I think that when we stay in that mindset, we miss out. And I would just encourage you, if you're a mom, to go, like, go out, keep your eyes open, be aware, be looking for people who are in a vulnerable situation, and seek to be in their life. Pray for opportunities to be in their life, because, yeah, I think it matters for sure.
Yeah, thank you for sharing, Natasha, for your perspective. Sister Angie, here's my question for you. What is it like for someone to enter into a community or enter into a completely foreign context, and how might the church come alongside and serve those in our communities?
So I'll give you just a little bit of background about myself now with a question. After college, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Nicaragua, so I have experience going into another culture and kind of feeling the shock of just culture shock. So I did have some Spanish under my belt, but still going into another country is really overwhelming. And so I had the support of Peace Corps, and I had the support of other volunteers and a whole program that's designed to support you. But so many people don't have that. My husband's from Nicaragua. I met him when I was there. And so he immigrated here with me. And he also, I saw him go through the process of immigration and a complete culture shock. But he also had the support of my family and a wife, and he had people in his circle who spoke the language. And I also had worked for the past 6 years with students who are from other countries as a newcomer teacher in New Bedford. And so I really see the situation through their eyes when they come to a new country, and often they don't want to come. They might have one parent with them and another parent stayed behind. So I feel like a lot of times when people hear they're in the United States, like, oh, that's wonderful, like the American dream. But for especially kids, it's not, like, they might not even want to be here at all. And so some words I would use to describe the feelings that go with that would be just complete exhaustion. Like, learning a new language and being in a new culture in a different place is exhausting. So it's mentally exhausting, and then it goes with physically exhausting. So I felt that learning a new language. My husband has felt that, and then a lot of the students that I've worked with, like, they're just tired. And so it might look like bored, it might look like disinterested, but a lot of times it's just like exhaustion and overwhelmed. Another thing would be isolation. So it's really easy to feel like you're not part of the community, and then just kind of like withdraw into yourself if there's not a community like really reaching out to you or individuals. Mm-hmm. Like, you might not tell anyone how you're feeling or just share kind of what's going on. And then with that, also overwhelmed. So just like new language, new culture, kind of an environment of like people maybe wanting to help, maybe not wanting to help, but not really knowing like who you can trust and who's really like looking for your benefit versus people trying to take advantage of you, like thinking of families who need apartments and things like that. A lot of people in the city are just kind of looking out to make a good buck, and so a lot of people like get the short end of the stick, and so it's hard to know like who's really there to help you and who's not. And so then what can our church do to serve people in those situations? I think an important thing is kind of to know your own congregation, know like, are there people who speak other languages in your congregation who could be a good supporter, just a translator, someone who can communicate more easily with somebody who might not speak English. Also, no services in your area. So what kind of food pantries might there be? What are kind of rules around around housing? How can you help someone who might be in a situation that they don't realize doesn't have to be like that? Yeah. And kind of just be an ally. And then also for churches, I think it's really important to be trauma-informed. So a lot of, more, I would say almost everyone who goes and comes to a new country has a lot of trauma if they've experienced it in their native land or in the road coming here. I think it's really important to just kind of know the effects of trauma and how that can present itself also in somebody. So yeah, be trauma-sensitive, culturally informed, and then also just like know your congregation, know different people's strengths who can help someone who might be in a situation where they feel really isolated or overwhelmed or exhausted.
Yeah, amen, sister. Thank you, Angie, for your perspective to that end. And so thank you, the three of you, for being up here. Thank you, Pastor Joel, for sharing this morning.